This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1114. This is a Relevant Podcast here in Orlando. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, he's back from Dubai. Artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What's happening?
I got some questions for you.
Oh, yeah.
Just down the street there in Nashville, our managing editor, downtown Emily Brown.
Hey, y'all.
And the whole family is here from LA. Please welcome Marty.
Howdy.
Derek, we miss you, man. You were in Dubai over the last couple shows.
Yeah.
How was
it? Such a flex.
Yeah.
I know, right?
I almost didn't come back. I ain't going to hold you.
You really liked it.
Man, it was such a, it's such a clean city and safe city. Like, you could literally.
Well, you know why? It's because they don't let women drive cars.
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
They don't. The impression there is terrible.
No, women can drive cars. I've seen several women driving cars.
I know. They actually changed that law 2 years ago.
It was a real law. I figured it was a real law. Yeah.
No, it was a real
I
law.
I figured it was.
An international pressure because it came out that women were so second class in Dubai. They changed the driving
law. So here's the thing. I'm sure if you stay in any place long enough, you'll find out the things that you don't like about it. But the one thing that I did love about it is being there and not having to worry about getting robbed.
Why would you not have to? I mean, there's so much money, so much wealth, so much. There's no crime. How could there be no crime? I would think it'd be a target for criminals.
Nah, it's because
they just cut their hands off. It's easy.
Well, the thing is, we can say what we want, but in America, I feel like we have laws and then we have laws to get around the laws. Like, there's no real consequences for you making decisions. Like, everybody can get away with whatever. And I think just in that place, it's not really like that. So, yeah, I mean, us Americans are like, oh, I could never live in a place where if I follow the rule, if I don't follow the rules, there's actual consequences. But over there, no one was tripping. It's just, hey, I'm not going to steal anything because something will happen to me that is meant to deter people from stealing. So, you know,
Torture is a great deterrent, is what you're saying. You are pro waterboarding.
I didn't say
torture is a great deterrent, but I am saying that if you steal something, okay, like we see the videos of people smashing and grabbing, and then the law protects smashing and grabbing, well, then don't be surprised if everybody smashes and grabs, right? Like, it's just, like, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know enough about Dubai's politics or its culture to even speak on what's happening. So, but all I do know is when people leave their shopping cart, you don't have to worry about stuff getting stolen out of it. And everyone drives a speed limit because there's cameras everywhere. And if you go over the speed limit, you get a ticket. I mean, it's you know what I'm saying? Like, it's for me, it was relaxing in that sense.
Were people staring at you like you must be a celebrity
because
you're tall and
nobody
cares?
No one cares. There's so much money over there and there's so much tourism. Like, it was tourists from everywhere. And which was another dope thing about it is, you know how you get those judgy looks? There was no judgy looks. Like, nobody was sizing you up. Everybody just on their thing and they trying to get where they trying to go. Everybody was kind and polite to me. I enjoyed my time in Dubai. I'm not gonna lie.
It sounds to me like when I would visit a buddy's house growing up that would live like in a fancy gated like golf course community, and it was all fun and games. But you take one joyride on a golf cart that you're not supposed to as a 14-year-old. And guess what? There's cameras everywhere out there, and you're going to get in trouble. That's what it seems like. You got to be cautious about this, the surveillance state, because they don't tolerate, they don't suffer fools like that golf course community.
It's absolutely a surveillance state. Now, that's why it would never fly over here, because Americans are not going to allow cameras to be in every inch of the city. But the thing is, why won't you allow cameras to be in every inch of the city and public places? Is because we want to get away with stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like if we being honest, like, it's like, oh, don't have a camera over there because you might blow up me breaking the law. So it's like, in one sense, I'm like, yeah, I'm not saying let's turn America to a surveillance state. But what I am saying
I think it's what I'm hearing, though.
Hey, here's my thing. I don't commit crimes. So you could put a camera in all public places and I would be fine. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't bother me
all. These privacy people, I have the same viewpoint, Derek. Like, all these people are like freaking out about your phone is tracking this and that. I'm like, well, then don't do that shady stuff on your phone. I like the fact.
Yeah, it's usually somebody who works at Old Navy that's telling me about the conspiracy. I'm like, you work at Old Navy. Nobody cares about what you're doing in your life. You'll be fine. You'll be good.
You will be just fine. Like, dog, it was cool. It was also cool to watch, like, honestly, like, being in a place that is highly Islamic, you know, and seeing, like, I mean, you would see people in these burqas. And at the same time, they're going into the Louis Vuitton store buying Louis Vuitton. It was kind of like it messed with my mind a little bit.
How much gold did you buy?
Man, only thing I bought was a watch. I bought my wife some diamond earrings and a bracelet. I bought a nice watch.
Are the prices better or worse?
Because it's duty free.
Well, no. So yes, if you buy something. If you buy something when you go to the airport, if you tell them you're a tourist, you can get all your taxes back. So
that's really cool. In Israel. Yeah, that's common.
So that's cool. But if you go to, there's a place called the Gold Souk. So there's two people in the Gold Souk. There's tourists that are getting taken advantage of because, and then there's the people that know whatever their price is, just cut it in half and talk to them and get what you want. You know, my uncle's been out there a lot, so we negotiated, and I got some really, really, really good prices on gold, because it's plentiful over there. But some of the tourists, I talked to a tourist, and she got cooked.
Why is gold plentiful? It's a desert. Is it because they're
taking
it's
just
it from
the industry.
Africa?
I think the industry is plentiful. I don't know if the mineral is plentiful, but the industry is like, there's gold everywhere. Like, so everywhere you go, there's two things in Dubai that you're going to find. You're going to find a lot of gold and a lot of perfume. Like,
they love the perfume.
Man, they were spraying oud. It's called oud, OUD. Man, I got sprayed by so much oud walking through airport. I mean, everywhere you go, somebody's trying to sell you some fragrances. So that's the two things that's over there.
Derek, the UAE, Dubai, is the biggest destination for African gold. So all that gold came from Africa.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm saying, I'm like, I don't know how I got there, but I'm like, it's everywhere. Like, there's gold everywhere, you know.
Here, Derek, I got to be honest. Mm-hmm. Here's how your experience, as it's described, sounds like to me. It sounds like going to a large open-air Nordstrom's where you go through people trying to sell you perfume. You see a lot of jewelry, and you know if you do one thing wrong, you're going to be on camera, and there's going to be covert security coming out to scoop you up.
You in trouble.
It sounds like essentially a trip to Nordstrom at this point.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll take it. But we had a good time, and we did ATVs in the desert.
Oh, that's fun.
That was really cool.
Were you able to preach the gospel out there?
You could do that in Phoenix. I'm good. The last thing that I did so anyone that knows me knows I'm extremely terrified of heights. Mm. And my wife and my uncle made me do this thing called Dinner in the Sky, where hoist you up on a crane. You're sitting at a bar, an open air bar. So
it's like a pedal tavern.
Yes.
Up in the air.
A pedal tavern that's 10 feet air. And that was the most terrifying experience I've ever, like,
were you
I'll
even able to
again.
Eat, or were you just like so stressed the whole time?
Oh, listen, I held it like a G. I got videos. I kept it gangster. Like, I didn't scream, nothing, but inside the grown man in me was in the fetal position.
Sweat.
Like, here's what I'm imagining. You know those videos of like friends like doing the slingshot rides, and the one friend screams and passes out, and wakes up and screams and passes out. That's Derek during dinner
inside.
It's just him
inside.
Out.
That's
just
what was happening. I passed out at least 10 times inside. Outside, I was cool as I was. You know, look, I was Denzel Washington cool, But inside, I was
I want to see the video of that because like, I want to see if you actually were playing it as cool as you thought you were.
Listen, I'm going through all the videos, like, Emily, like, because they're all taking videos because they want you to enjoy the experience. And all the videos, I have this smile that's like this. Y'all can't see it, but I'm going to show Emily the smile that's like this.
That is the fakest smile I've ever seen in my life.
Like all the none of the pictures. I'm not posting any pictures because they're like,
yeah,
you know what
you're
I'm
like
saying?
Gripping the table. Yeah,
yeah, it was rough.
You're like a kid on school picture day where they're having to hold that smile. Like,
they're like, yo, you can sit back from the table if you want to. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm just gonna stay right here.
How big is this like crane? Like, how can you like get up and move around? Or are you just like you?
No, there's no getting up and moving around. You're strapped in like a pilot, right?
What and about the waiters?
The waiters are in the center of it. So it's almost set up hibachi style, right? So it's like the waiters are in the center. Or there's two chefs. There's a chef and a sous chef. And then there's a waiter on one end of the bar. And there's a waiter on the other end. And they all have harnesses on. So some goes bad. They're fine because they have the harnesses.
They have parachutes.
We don't have anything. We have the seat that we're like buckled into. Now, here's one thing I did appreciate. The buckles are behind you, so no one can panic and unlock their buckle. Right. So, you know, that, I do appreciate that. But
I envision this experience being like you're over the Grand Canyon or in Dubai, you're over the top level of the top skyscraper or something or whatever.
No,
but I think I heard you say that you're 10 feet in the air.
No, 10 stories.
10 stories, 100 feet in the air. Yeah, okay, yeah. So, that's a little better.
Yeah,
you said 10 feet. I was like, you can just jump down. Why are people harnessing this?
It reminds me of a Chili's I went to in Seattle that had the...
No.
Just up in the balcony.
Sorry, I said 10. I meant 10 stories. So I guess 50 meters is 10 stories, correct? Something
10
around
stories is 100 feet. 10 feet per story. So that's so
everything was in meters over there. So I don't know. But I'm thinking it's like 10.
Wait, was the food good though? So, yeah. Like, was it at least kind of worth it?
Guy food?
I'm a foodie.
You can say no. So speak your truth.
I think, no. It was lamb and steak and all that stuff. But I'm a foodie. So I'll say this. It was adequate. It was adequate for the average person.
You're paying for the experience, not for the food, basically.
For the average person, they would love it. But for a foodie like myself, it was cool.
So it was Cheesecake Factory.
I give it a little more elevated than Cheesecake Factory. I think it's a little more.
Would it have tasted better if you weren't 100 feet in the air?
Maybe. I probably, the nervousness and the bile in my stomach that was fighting back probably was kind of fighting the seasoning.
That makes sense.
I don't know.
Derek, I do have a question about the four-wheeling or ATVing in the desert, because I think we've all had this experience on a vacation where we rent jet skis at some location and it sounds like a fantastic idea. Uh-huh. And then you get out on the jet skis and you're out there for about 10 minutes. You do a couple circles, you go really fast, you slow down, you kind of spray, and then you look at it, you're down at your watch, and you're like, I've got 45 minutes left on this jet ski rental, and I feel like I've done everything that I can do in just open water on a jet ski. Like, what else am I doing here?
No, that wasn't the experience. I had a lot of fun, but here's where the fun came in, okay? So I and my wife were the youngest two people there. No. Second youngest. There was a young lady and then her friend, and then the rest of the people were retired pretty much because it's my uncle's anniversary and he invited his friends out.
It's beautiful.
So the funnest part about the ATVs is watching auntie and uncle on these ATVs trying to figure out how not to get flipped over in the sand. Literally one lady, elderly lady, fell off the ATV and had a crash, and it was
they left her out
no
there.
We did not, but that's the thing. So all had to be in a pack, so everybody's had to stop and wait and watch them try to help this lady back onto the ATV. So
she
wasn't
part of your group, Derek, was she? She wasn't part of your group.
Yes, she was a part of the group. She was one of my
friends.
Okay,
so it's not funny then.
It was hilarious inside, but outside it was not fun at all.
Yeah, you have to pretend you're like, oh, are you okay? Can I rev this still?
Absolutely. So like we're waiting and people are falling and everything. And then another thing. So this came with dinner and a show. So, but the show was like 3 miles into the desert. It was a Turkish thing. They had food from Morocco, Turkey. It was super dope. They had fire breathing people and stuff. It was super dope. But our car got stuck in the sand. Oh. And then the car that they sent to get us out got stuck in the sand.
Oh, gosh.
And then the car that they sent to get both the cars out almost got stuck in the sand. They had to like flatten the tires or something. And
Lord of the Flies at this point.
It was crazy. Like, but it was.
That was the
best part of
it. We're now
the
Bedouin people. Yes. We're just going to set up.
I know you're talking about regular sand, but I'm imagining it's like quicksand where it's like you got to get someone out.
Yeah, me too.
Otherwise, like.
No, it's not quicksand at all. But it was. But it was nothing but sand everywhere, yeah. though. So
okay, this might be a dumb question. Where is quicksand? Like, where can I find quicksand? Because it's just not.
Just quicksand felt like is found in hollows at the mouths of large rivers or along flat stretches of streams or beaches where pools of water become partially filled with sand and an underlying layer of stiff clay or another dense material.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There has to be some water involved because that's what makes it quicksand.
I refuse to believe that quicksand is anything other than like a dramatic plot
device. And that's the only time I've ever seen it. So that's why I was like, where can I
find
it?
Throw me the rope.
Like, I thought I would be experiencing more in life, but no.
It's particularly common in the marshy coasts of Florida and the Carolinas.
Of course it would be in Florida.
In southern Utah, New Mexico, and northern Arizona.
Good old Florida.
Yeah, we've traveled extensively, all of us, through those areas and never seen it one time. It's like the old, it's like the beliefs that I feel like a lot of us grew up about traumatic brain injuries, mm-hmm. where the best way to like a blow to the head obviously only causes one temporary condition, and that is amnesia of everything you've ever experienced in your life, except for the ability to speak. Right? Like you know you're a human, and you know you just don't know where you are, or who these people are.
Yes.
But and we all know that the cure. It's very obvious, too. You just have to be smacked in the head again.
That's it.
Like, these are, like, quicksand is just like that. It's, they were made into plot devices, like, on, like, Gilligan's Islands and Looney Tunes, or like 80s sitcoms. And now it's just, you know, we just have a dramatic misunderstanding of them, you know?
Can you swim out of quicksand? One can easily float on quicksand. Simply lie down and roll out of harm's way. It's the motion of trying to pull free and swim that creates problems. But it says quicksand is usually only a few feet deep, and what you see on the big screen rarely happens. The danger of quicksand is actually minimal. You go down a couple feet and you just walk out.
It's not like Indiana Jones. It's not.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is like I used to think like bad guys, like bombs that bad guys uses were like bowling balls with comically large fuses on them.
Fuses, yeah.
And that's just how we understood all explosives to work. Or that any bomb had a little digital clock on it because that's how they operate. And it can easily be diffused.
You clip the yellow wire,
the single wire. But if you don't, it will speed up the clock to like double time. Yes. And then you have very limited time to figure out. Like that was just our understanding of how all of this worked. Yeah. You know?
Are you trying to say that movies lied to me?
What? Yeah, you know that?
This is news to me.
We have a great show in store for you today. Moving the show along. Mosaic MSC joins us later. Don't want to miss that segment. Also, we have your feedback at the end of the show. But stay tuned right now. Up next, it's Relevant Buzz. I place a bet on a game, knowing no one will score, and make a sweat watching the greats dragging their feet on the floor. Is it ambitiously weak to be proficiently poor and still smile when on trial? But still, it's ace, top, mid, boss, that's boss, class, sweet. You're listening to Yard Act. The song is Dream Job. Today's show is brought to you in part by the new documentary, Buying Her. Why is sex trafficking a multi-billion-dollar industry? Sex buyers. To end trafficking, we need to put them in the spotlight. The documentary, Buying Her, created by the organization Exodus Cry, is a first-of-its-kind film exposing the truth about sex buyers. It captures the unfiltered stories of men revealing how they became predatory consumers and the booming sex trade, and how some of them found redemption. Buying Her strikes at the very heart of sex trafficking, and it's available to watch now for free at buyingher.com. com. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by the new book, Five Mere Christians. If you aren't a pastor, missionary, or a Christian podcaster, do you struggle to glorify God in your work? The new book, Five Mere Christians, gives you real-life examples that will forever transform how you work. Through the compelling profiles of notable mere Christians like C.S. Lewis, Fred Rogers, and three others, authors Jordan Rayner and Kaylee Cox show how you can glorify God through your work today. Get the book or learn more at fivemerechristians.com. Again, that's fivemerechristians.com. Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
Tell us what's happening at the intersection of faith and culture, Emily.
Yeah, I want to talk about this interesting study that came out recently. Apparently, Gen Z has said that they want to see less romantic relationships and sex on television and movies and see more platonic friendships. This study asked viewers between the ages of 10 and 24 just kind of their thoughts on how relationships are sort of portrayed online on TV and movies. And 51.5% said that like romantic relationships and kind of like sex plot lines are just really pointless and that they don't really care to see them. And
I have a theory about this real quick, Emily.
Okay. I do too. I want to hear yours.
Love it.
Okay. My theory is,
I have a theory too.
Since a combination of interest rates, COVID, and job trends have left a lot of Gen Zers still living at home with their parents. Mm. We have parallel studies that also show that.
There's a connection there for sure.
And kids these days, I say kids these days, young adults in their 20s are now living at home with their parents more and more and are probably watching more television with them. And they know, just like any person since the advent of moving picture screens, there is on a list of the most uncomfortable situations anyone can experience. It's watching something on TV or a movie with your parents when something like that comes on.
Yeah.
It is. I don't know that maybe this is about morality and their thoughts about romance. Maybe it's just that they're living at home more and do not want to encounter that horrible experience that I think, you know, everyone at some point has had in a movie theater or watching TV. Do you guys think I'm wrong here?
I think that's absolutely a factor.
I mean, I was so scarred. I was so scarred by watching Titanic with my dad when that unexpected painting scene came on as a child that.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I was scarred by the scene. I was scarred by the fact my dad was sitting next to me.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I never seen Titanic, so I don't know what y'all talking about. But
paint me like one of your French girls.
Yeah.
So there was a topless painting.
Yeah,
scene
she's naked in this PG-13 movie. Yeah.
Oh, that's and
it was
what?
The '90s.
It was different era.
No,
Kubrick painting a girl. Yeah.
PG-13 in the '90s was basically soft R. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was like a scene of like if you saw a PG-13 movie, there was a butt or like a non-sexual boob that was going to make an appearance. Mm. That was just what happened in the '90s. Yeah.
It's a unique feeling of just like ice running through your veins when you're sitting there and everyone just doesn't
it's
know
tough.
Where. Like everyone can't look at the screen, but they definitely don't want to look over at each other.
I want to ask my parents, like, what are you thinking though? I wonder if they're stressing out, like we're stressing out, like, oh my God, like
oh,
my
yeah.
parents are right here.
Got
oh,
to.
Absolutely.
my theory. So the study came out and it sounded like, okay, Gen Z saying there's too much sex on TV and movies. We don't want that. It's more about friendships. I was like, oh, what a nice moral statement. And then it dawned on me, this is the generation that has devices in their hand and they can look at porn whenever they want.
Mm.
So maybe they're just not as titillated or drawn by sex because it's so ubiquitous in their lives. And so they were like, when I'm watching TV, I'd rather just watch something else because I can watch sex whenever I want to.
I think there's probably multiple factors. Yeah, it's very cynical. I think there's probably a lot of factors. One thing I thought of I thought this is where you were going, Jesse, you took it a different way, but I do think this generation being isolated in COVID, I think there is this epidemic of loneliness that specifically Gen Z is dealing with. So it's like, when I watch TVs and movies, I want to see something that like,
TVs and movies? You just look at the television?
I was hoping you wouldn't catch that. TV shows and movies. I want
when
something.
When I go to Best Buy,
you know he's
and
not
I'm looking at
pass
all the TVs.
Up He's not going to pass up opportunity to be smart. No, like, I know. He's not going to do it. You already know this.
He keeps me humble, Emily, which is good. Right. No, but like when I watch shows and movies, like I want to see something that like I enjoy or that I aspire to or that, I don't know, that just like is reflective of what I would maybe want in life. And so it's like I, like if I'm a young kid stuck at home and have grown up in a pandemic, I want to see friendships and people hanging out and having fun. So I think there's probably multiple factors.
Wait, this is a more positive take on Cameron's perspective, yeah.
but your psychological draw is interesting because it's like movies and television shows us an aspirational life that I don't have as my reality. That's why I want to watch you. Mm-hmm. So you're saying in previous generations, sex was the aspiration. Yes. So we want to see that in these plots. Now I'm so lonely and isolated. Friendship and community is the aspiration because sex is on my phone. I can do that whenever I want. So I can. Sure. That's interesting.
Yeah.
In other words, like we have what I was going to say was I think they're just inundated with it. And I think in the past, in order to get people's attention, like with us growing up, is throw a sex scene in there. Like what Marty said, Titanic, a boob is like, oh, that's provocative. We got to go watch that because there's a boob in it, right?
You see it all the time. It was like, oh my God. It was
now it's
there.
Everywhere. Like there's not even a story. It's just like, this is a crappy movie, but let's put 15 sex scenes in it. And then now people will watch it. Well, that's not, like you said, they got sex everywhere. So like, it sounds like the kids just want an actual story. They're like, hey, can y'all give us a story without boobs? Like, what? And when you think about us growing up, like, we watched, like, man, all right, what was Macaulay Culkin had a crazy run of dope movies. Even like the good
That's
son,
a great point, Derek.
Like you could watch some really cool movies that
there was movies that, for us though, right? Like that era was good, and it, like Mighty Ducks, right? Like Mrs. Doubtfire. There was an era where like kids' movies were adult friendly as well, so you could watch with the family. And now you can't. It's like Euphoria, or that's like the reference I'm using because I think that was on the study too.
But I think
or
that
even
is-
Friends, Living Color, Living Single. Those were shows that you could watch like, with your friends. Emily, I'm sorry, I cut you off. You had something? Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think it's good that Marty's bringing up the show Euphoria because that is referenced a lot because for all intents and purposes, that show is technically geared towards teenagers because it's about high school students. But that show is known for being so overt with sex and drugs and all these like just...
And rock and roll.
And it's interesting that like that's when we think about like, okay, well, what's a show for teens right now? And we go to this, which is like just one of the most, like I said, like there's tons of sex and stuff in it. And the fact that the teens are saying like, I don't want that. I want something more wholesome.
They want an actual story.
Yeah.
All right. What else do you have, Emily?
There's another study I want to talk about. Pastors are really concerned about younger generations and basically their lack of financial giving to the church. So like millennials and Gen Z, they very much give.
Who's concerned about that?
They can't even afford a house.
That's
what do you mean? Like a dog? We can't even pay rent, bro. What is you saying? Like you mad because we can't help you buy another car? Cause we can't buy a house.
All right, Mr. Cynical. It's that the younger generations aren't tithing at all.
Because we can't buy a house.
I did not expect
we can't
man.
Pay first rent. Fruits. We can't afford first gas. Fruits. You remember on Kanye album, we broke, five broke. We ain't got it. We collectively, as a generation, is broke, five broke. Sorry, Cameron. I'll let you go ahead.
I'm just saying that doesn't negate the spiritual principle of tithing. Just adjust your budget accordingly. But the pastor is saying that they're worried about the future of the church because the millennials and Gen Z don't tithe at all. And then they're going to be the primary support of the church is an issue.
No, so look, all right.
Go for it.
I have a different perspective on tithing. I don't think tithing is an Old Testament law. So it's like if people that don't follow the Old Testament law say that we got to tithe, then that we got to follow all the Old Testament laws. You can't pick and choose the Old Testament laws you want to follow. But I do believe in giving. I think the New Testament talks about giving. So I don't think tithing is a law, and also tithing, when you look in the Old Testament, was meant for, it was more like welfare for people who couldn't take care of themselves, and the Levites who couldn't own land. Preachers can own land. Levites couldn't own land. Preachers can are good. So, but that's that. That's neither here nor there. But when
Jesus did talk about the widow's mite and things like that. I mean, Jesus
but when we talk about giving, most of that's coming out of abundance. So they're saying, hey, money is down for the new generation of people.
Oh,
well, guess what?
The widow's mite parable doesn't talk about abundance.
No, it does talk about abundance.
Her penny was worth more than...
Because she gave what she had, though. Compared to everyone else.
But it wasn't out of abundance.
Yes, it was. That was her abundance.
She gave sacrificially. That her giving was more sacrificial than the rich
man.
When I'm saying abundance,
I'm not talking monetarily. I'm talking about in comparative to what everybody else gave. She gave the most, even though it was just a mite, because it was out of an abundance. It doesn't say that she gave, that she didn't pay Caesar or pay her rent to give her mite. It's just saying what she had left over was just a little bit. It was one mite. That's all she had left over from taking care of herself. And she gave that. But everybody else, they gave out of fear, meaning that they were trying to hoard stuff for themselves. So all I'm saying is, if people can't take care
the
of the properness,
Derek Johnson on tithing do not necessarily reflect the views of Relevant Media Group.
We could debate tithing. I don't have a problem with that, because I could take you straight to the Bible and show you. You won't find a New Testament verse that says people are supposed to tithe. So if we're saying we're not going to follow the Old Testament laws, then why are you tithing? Because that's an Old Testament principle. So we can have that debate later.
I think that for me, in my perspective, is like a lot of, I think that the flexing of pastors, like of recently seeing pastors flex and like, you know, preachers and sneakers and stuff like that. I think that when Gen Z, I'm not Gen Z, I'm a millennial, but when they see that, it's almost like, where's the money going to? And so I do appreciate guys like Mike Todd, who at the end of the year, they give all that money away. And like, you know, like my church in Florida was affected by Mike Todd when I was there. He gave us like $100,000 and we didn't even,
dude,
I mean, like he,
I can't believe you just said that. I need to say something about Mike Todd. I don't know Mike Todd. I know a lot of these guys. I don't know Mike Todd. I was having lunch with my pastor the other day and I noticed he had gone out to Transformations Conference. And I was like, oh, do you know Mike? And he goes, I don't really know him. I know him. I mean, like, I've met him a couple times, but I don't really know him. But yeah, he gave us $100,000 when we were planting the church.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that is, and Mike Todd to me is my, when I see,
he's
when
like
people
the most
are like,
generous person behind the scenes.
Yeah. And that's what my point is, like, with out of excess, he's like, hey, we don't need it. But I think that I have also known of many churches that will take that money and then keep it. And then, you know, there's people in the church who are struggling. And then I've seen other churches where they're like, listen, if you are a widow or if you need help, please, we want to give you money. Like, I've seen the reverse of it. But I think the overall idea is that our preacher is abusing the money. And so why would I give to somebody that I just don't, there's no transparency. So I think this new level of pastoral pastors that we're having, there's a level of transparency that I really do appreciate. I tithe personally because I don't know. People are like, are you religious? Like, is it like the religious mindset where I have to tithe? Because I, you know, when I got saved, it was like tithe or you're going to hell. I don't do it out of judgment. I do believe it's blessed me. But that's just me, though. You know, like that's what I believe. Well, but, you know, I could see it being hard to tithe. And then the pastor is like, you know, pulling up in a Bentley or something like that, which is could be common.
I do want to clarify, like, because we were talking about Gen Z like doesn't give. The research did say young donors are giving. They're giving to like international organizations, like missions based things, or like they're just not giving specifically to the local church.
They want their money to go.
But
they want their money to go
giving,
somewhere
so.
that they feel like that is going to do work. Again, if we're talking about tithing in the Old Testament, it was meant to take care of people that couldn't necessarily take care of themselves, and we see. I've seen churches that, you know, people tithe to for, you know, for years. And then if they are late on a bill or they need help with a bill or came into an emergency, they couldn't even get any money from the church or they put all these stipulations on it. And just to give y'all a stat to let people know what's going on, 56% of Americans cannot cover a $1,000 emergency. period. Like they can't, 56% of people don't have $1,000 saved up. So just to give us a perspective on that, so we could say, hey, you know, we live in a country where, or it doesn't matter, you know, God's principles, you should still, you know, give and things like that. And I agree with that. I think that we should definitely be generous and that God's going to take care of us. But God also don't want us to be no idiots. So
he loves a cheerful giver.
Absolutely.
So not an obligation. It's out of the heart. All right. What's the last thing, Emily? We got to wrap this up.
Super quick. This actually just came out earlier today. Rolling Stone has reported that HBO uses, quote, an army of fake accounts on Twitter to attack critics of their show, which is very funny and petty.
Kevin Durant.
I love it. But the, exactly. They're basically following the NBA model for writers, players, and coaches, and evidently officials. I think HBO is just a large scale public. There's so many, you know, I do feel like public people who've been kind of caught doing this. There needs, if I was like in a lawmaker. Right. And because there's so we've all seen like some congressional hearing where they bring in like Mark Zuckerberg or, you know, some Silicon Valley founder. And they're asking the most inane questions that you can tell a lot of these lawmakers have never opened up a social media app and have very little. I would do something about burner accounts. Like, you know how like their sponsored content or hashtag ad, if it's a burner, it has to, you have to be shamed. Like, whether you're HBO or whether, you're Kevin Durant.
There's no way they anybody could ever figure out it's a burner.
Listen,
I have three accounts on my phone, right? When I go into X or Instagram or any of them, I have Cameron Strang, Relevant Podcast. So if I'm switching between accounts, does that mean I'm like Relevant Magazine is my burner account? There's no way.
Listen, it's as a lawmaker, I'm telling, this is what Silicon Valley and these apps do. They solve problems. Okay.
Dubai,
it's not my job as a lawmaker.
They got surveillance everywhere. So we just need to talk
exactly.
with them. You're
allowed to use, I'm not saying you can't use them. I'm just saying it has to say hashtag burner and you have to be shamed by it. Like it's gotten out of control and it's ruined the utility of all of this. Figure it out, Silicon Valley.
The moral of the story is if you criticize an HBO show online and some people come at you saying, no, it's great. You're wrong. It's probably HBO telling you.
So you said they're bots too, right? They're not even real accounts. They're bots. They're not real people.
It came out because a guy is suing HBO for kind of workplace harassment, and he had to list his duties. And he said one of them was to go onto these burner accounts and
it's humans.
Like attack critics.
Yeah. No,
yeah, it's like actual humans.
Now
I know who I'm fighting.
HBO staff is out there tweeting you.
Yeah,
that
what's
the
salary
for that job? I need to apply. What's the salary?
Don't say anything about Euphoria. Don't let them hear this episode. They're going to come at us, Emily.
They come at us. Tell us how great Euphoria is.
I hope they
do. That'll do it for
Relevant Buzz.
Stay tuned. Up next, Mosaic MSC joins us.
Like me as much as I like you. Do you wanna run with me into the night? I'm just as sure about you as I know the sky's blue. Do you like me too, or do I have to fight you? Do you want me as much as I want you? Just your body language implies that you might do. I can't help but feel like this stage is exciting. Do you want me back, or is this some?
You're listening to Solomon. The song is Unrequited. That was my high school nickname. Are you a recent college grad or about to graduate from college and have no idea what's next? Check out the Global Ambassador Program, or GAP, with ELIC. GAP is a professional development program that will help you gain the tools you need for a lifetime of impact. Be immersed in the cultures of Thailand, Tunisia, or Uzbekistan for 9 months as you take language classes, grow in your faith, and serve the local community alongside a team of other Christian young professionals. And get this, ELIC recently opened applications for 2026. You could be on a plane next summer, impacting lives and reaching your fullest potential. To learn more about GAP and take the next step, go to elic.org/relevant. That's elic.org/relevant. Well, our guests today are Mariah McManus and Carlos Pimentel from Mosaic MSC. The worship group from Mosaic Church in LA are gearing up to drop new music that sounds unlike anything they've ever released. We spoke to them about why they're changing up their sound, how they find creative inspiration, and why they want to push the boundaries of worship music. Here's our conversation with Mosaic MSC.
I just want to know, like, what's been like the inspiration for this new music? Where is it coming from?
Yeah. Well, you know, every time we go and write, a lot of times we have to get out of LA because LA, like we were just talking about, is chaotic and we love it. We choose to live here and to be here, but definitely takes some like intentionality to leave like the noise and the craziness. And so usually we go right, and there's a lot of times like an intention. So like, I remember the last trip we went on when we wrote Your Love Will Never Change, one of our writers was like, okay, so like usually you have like a verse or like a thought or a word, or like a lot of times we've had like an album title before we've even written the songs. And she was like, so yeah, what is it? And I was like, I don't have it. I don't have one. And that was really, really cool because it's always fun to look at creativity from a different perspective and to like try different things. And we've gotten us into such a flow in the many years that we've all written together. And it was a good, nice change up to be like, let's just take all the like expectations off and just see what comes naturally. And so we kind of let the songs lead, and this Your Love Will Never Change was like the craziest, most out of the box song that we had. And it was the one that all of us just like immediately were like, that is so special. And what's cool about that song for us is just that it's just as special, like with all the auto tune and the pitch shifting and like the craziness, as it is just like stripped down and live with just lyrics. And that's always like a really, really beautiful thing when you realize, okay, yeah, this song's cool, but does it actually have the depth and the meaning that we want it to have? And so that's why we love the song. But yeah.
No way, no way. Who else could do what you do? No one, no one. Where could I go?
When worship music gets experimental, because I see so many other genres trying new things, and so I really love when worship artists kind of step out too. I'm curious, like, where did y'all get inspiration for this sound?
I mean, it's like a little bit maybe hard to point at something specific. I just remember when we normally don't do this, but going into that writing camp, we did a playlist. Maybe we should share that playlist at some point.
It's a great playlist, incredibly random.
It's so random. So everyone in the band basically submitted their songs, and we all together were listening to the same playlist for the days like leading to the camp. And it was like cool. I think a lot of the songs in there, like, they do have, they're like upbeat songs, and like they feel fun, and maybe it's also like we're also different, you know. Like, I'm Puerto Rican, a lot of my influence come from reggaeton music or music that no one have ever heard before, and I love sharing it with my friends, and like having my friends are so supportive of the music that I can bring, and we're so collaborative in the way that we think about music, and I feel that really inspired like the overall. And it was not just a song, like everything that came out from that camp, I think, has a little bit of that same.
Yeah. And it's all as like, it's different, so many different pieces.
Yeah.
As random maybe as the playlist are the songs that came out of that writing retreat. But it's like, so what Carlos is saying, like, so representative of like each different perspective, you know. And we've come to terms with the fact that like one song is going to be so drastically different from the other, because one person is so drastically different from the other. And when it sounds like the same, it feels okay, like it's only maybe one from one person. And so I think it's like the best part about it is that you probably won't ever hear a song like that from us again. I hope it's something as cool and as unique and as like shocking. But yeah, it really came from that playlist that was little pieces of all of us, you know, and songs like I would never even know to find.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't even know that part of Spotify, but, you know, that I'm being exposed to by my friends who I trust as artists and creatives. And so to be able to like bring that all together is really, really cool.
Were y'all nervous at all, like, to experiment with your sound?
No. I think for us it comes very naturally, like, maybe to an extreme where we'd rather be misunderstood and, like, true to our selves than be, like, digestible if we're not, you know? And the best thing about being part of a church is that being true to like ourselves is being true to us as a community, not us as individuals. And so, you know, we're just like a very, very small part of a huge group of people that we have the honor of like musically representing. And so, you know, we have to consider, and we want to consider, and we love to consider our church, the role that the song plays in the community and like how it's sung. But that's something that, because we're in LA, I feel like we have an incredible advantage to be able to be out there and like think a little bit like differently in terms of how we express ourselves musically, because everyone here is also expressing themselves in a different way, which is probably how they found themselves in LA in the first place. And so, you know, we've been incredibly lucky that like our leaders and our pastors entrust us to try to push the limits, try to explore, try to outdo ourselves, and be in constant competition with like what we've done in the past. And it's a true representation of like us constantly seeking Jesus and constantly seeking what he wants for us. It's like, okay, how do we push further in every aspect of our life as well? How do we like continue to follow that path instead of just staying in one like train of thought or in one state of mind, in one genre of music? We're like, let's just do whatever's in our mind and see where it takes us.
Yeah, I feel like we write and we do music not from a place of we do it from a place of freedom, you know, like we feel comfortable exploring and trying, like from lyrically with the lyrics and words that we're using to the music that we're exploring. There's like zero sense of we shouldn't do this, you know?
Which maybe we should have.
Maybe we should have. But we're okay living in a space where you know, especially in that first part of steps of writing and creating, having that sense of freedom and knowing that, hey, you can try something and if it doesn't work, it's okay. It's a huge thing, you know. When we do it in front of people, it's like, are people gonna think that we're crazy?
Oh yeah, in front of people, definitely nervous. Yeah.
But like what Mariah was saying, I feel a lot of people in our community, and it's like the beauty of what we do and what we love doing it. We're connected to our local church, and like the music that we're doing and we're writing and creating is first for our community, and it's a constant test. It's a constant. Let's try this and see if it works. You know, it's not just like coming to the church and be like, hey, here's a song, you gotta like it. It's like, no, we're gonna
play it 100 times until you love it.
We'll play it, and if you like it, we want your feedback. We want to know if it's something that works for our congregation and for the people listening to our music.
I'd really love to know, do you have any like advice for someone who maybe is stuck creatively and like wants to get out of a rut and like get confident in their creativity again?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the biggest advantage we have is that we have collaborators. I think one of the hardest things, like we both individually write music and come from that world before we ever met each other. And I feel like I hit that wall a lot more independently. And there's no like ceiling when you're in collaboration with other people. You know, I think that's something beautiful that community's taught me is that like, even in life, it's like when you're collaborating with people, you get a lot more energy, you get a lot more excited for life. You know, there's more hope, there's more depth, there's more joy. And so to be in collaboration and alongside of other people that are on mission with you, that are excited about writing music, that are excited about creating something, you know, you lean on each other. In any relationship, in life, any friendship, you have to lean on each other in different moments. And I think that's the best part about creating with other people is that like, if something's not inspiring you in the moment, you have somebody to feed off of. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I feel like there's never been, we've definitely left writing sessions being like, that wasn't the best. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because you're not always going to get the best. You know, you're not always going to strike gold or like hit 100% every time. But it's the that's just part of the muscle and the discipline of doing any sort of creative act is like you just keep pushing through. But being able to do it with people to me is like the thing that snaps me out of it. And doing it for people, not just with people, but for people, is amazing to be able to remember that like what you're doing it for is something bigger than you.
I would say like if you're stuck, you have to go back to the basics of what you do, you know, like we're so driven by outcomes, and especially, you know, from a creative standpoint, you know, like you're doing music, there's a song, you're trying to write a song, and the song is not complete until you have a song, you know, and like there's mentally we know, you know, like you're not succeeding until you get the outcome. And a lot of times, you know, like I know in my personal life, I'm in a season right now where, you know, I've taken a lot more responsibility with work, and life is a lot more complicated. I have 3 kids, you know, 2 of them play soccer every weekend. There's a lot of things happening at church. We're working on a conference, working on Mosaic, on MSC. And the other day I was like, I feel stuck. And I was like, I just got it. What I'm going to do right now, I'm just going to block 3 hours of my day, and I'm going to sit down and play in the piano without the intention of necessarily coming out with an outcome of a song. And I just sat down, started playing, and just started like processing through writing the way that I was feeling. And it was so liberating. It was so exciting for me to tune into that part of my something that's connected to my essence, that I love to do regardless of having a final song or a final product. Mm-hmm. Just being there and being able to write something that connected deeply to the moment that I was in gave me so much life. How do I thank you for
all of the ways you've come through? That was Mosaic MSC. Stay tuned. Up next, it's your feedback. Go check my desktop. Applesauce, I'm hangry. God said we next up. Yo, cool, can't face me. Look at that corner. Look like that's fading. I can't go back and forth. That's way too draining. Stack up like Tetris. I don't do gaming. My character blacked out. Y'all boys can't play me. Right. I gotta run with the wind. He opened the door and I win. I did it for all of my kin. You're listening to John Keith. The song is God Don't Lie. What if you could change a child's life with just $10? Right now, thousands of vulnerable children in East Africa are suffering from jiggers. It's a painful, preventable parasite that burrows into their feet. Soul Hope is the only organization treating it through foot washing, medical care, and durable closed-toed shoes that protect kids long after treatment. $10 may not seem like much in today's world, but when we come together, those small gifts add up to big change. Join the 10 for 10 campaign. $10 protects 10 small toes. Visit soulhope.org/10 to give now. One small gift makes a big difference. Again, that's soulhope, S-O-L-E, hope, www.rockauto.org/TEN. Okay, it's time for your feedback. Last week, we got talking about fall and the pumpkin spices of and all the things, all the trappings. And we got thinking about all the things that annoy us about fall. So we asked you, what's your least favorite thing about fall? We're so uplifting here at the show. You hit us up on X at Relevant Podcast and at Relevant Magazine everywhere else. And here's a few of our favorites.
Caleb's absolutely right. It's the time change, which I feel like every year I hear, yeah, they're changing it. This is the year. This is the last one. They're finally rolling this law made for agrarian times. They're finally changing it. But he says it's the most annoying. Who wants it to get dark after 4 p.m.? I've been working late and it's lights out this week. And you know, it is a bummer when you leave work or leave your house in the middle of the afternoon. It's already dark. There's no reason for this law to exist anymore. And they talk about it every year. Burner accounts and daylight saving times. Get on it, lawmakers. I don't care what your politics are. I will vote for you. Listen, politicians.
But wouldn't daylight savings make it get darker?
Daylight savings all year round.
I heard. Okay. You said agrarian society. I had always heard that as well. This is about farming and the harvest and all that kind of stuff. It's not. It started in 1918 during World War I to conserve fuel.
Mm.
So they did it literally as an act to conserve fuel for some reason, and it just stuck. Mm. And then we've been it ever since because of
World War One's been over for a while.
Now. Right. Makes sense.
So we may want to hold on to that rule because it ain't looking good for the home team right now. We got a lot going on, so we may need to hold on to it.
At the very least, give us an extra you know, hour of daylight.
First Sunday of November, that's when it happens, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. First Sunday of November. Changing the clocks allows us to maximize the amount of sunlight we get while we're awake. Contrary to popular belief, daylight savings was not introduced to help farmers get some extra sun, nor was it an invention of Benjamin Franklin. Instead, lawmakers thought it might lead us to use less electricity during World War I. So,
either way, it's
stupid.
Last time I checked, the war that war is over. And
that also doesn't make sense to me because if it's darker outside, mm-hmm. I have to turn on my... Like, I have to turn on more light.
The whole argument was just...
It doesn't make sense. Destroyed.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, it's depressing. That's depressing. There's no need for it. There's no need for it. Or burners. This would be my whole platform if I was running for the presidency. It's just common sense, burners. People. You know, like, we'll have generals figure out military stuff. I'll have economists figure out the economy. I'm just the common sense guy, and I'm not going to busy myself
with... The Ministry of Common Defense, Jesse, vote for him, vote
exactly.
for Jesse.
Just straight up common sense. From now on, by mandate, there are eight hot dogs in a package and eight hot dog buns. There's no more discrepancies.
I agree.
I'm just saying, my whole platform would be common sense.
Common sense.
Because if we can't figure out hot dogs... Okay, how are we supposed to figure out?
I'm supposed to lead the economy.
Some global conflict, the next pandemic. The tax rates.
You're onto
something.
We
don't even have hot dogs figured out. Okay, let's start there. Let's start with the easy stuff.
That's awesome.
And just work our way outward. It's like
it's
like when you have
a common sense ticket. I like it. Who would be your VP? Seinfeld.
Huh? Larry David, really. It's like a Larry
David.
Yeah,
probably Larry David. Because it's like when you have a to-do list. Everyone knows this. When you come into like a Saturday and you got the to-do list, you sandbag like the first five just so you can check them off the list.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
I just
the
did
first
that.
Five
oh, my
like,
goodness.
Replace paper towels. Done. You know what I mean? Like, cut it. Yeah, cutting the grass is at the bottom of the list because if you don't get there and it's like a three-hour job, look at all the stuff you checked off because you sandbagged. But if you start with the top, if you start with cutting the grass at the top, guess what? Probably nothing on the list is going to get done. This is the principle of the Common Sense Party. Sandbagging the to-do list. This is the Common Sense Party. That is common sense.
So of all the societal ills, the Common Sense Party starts off with hot dogs. We're going to fix
hot
dogs. We're
going to
fix
daylight
savings. You got my vote. You got my vote.
We're going to fix burner accounts. We're knocking it all out.
You got my vote.
I can't solve racial inequity or
overnight.
That's not his job. That's not his job. His job is the common sense ministry of defense.
We're working our way down a list is what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not on
the
list.
Get the easy stuff out the way, right? It's like the Dave Ramsey plan or whatever, right?
So, because the political gridlock is because they're dealing with they're dealing with too big a problem is what you're saying. So the gridlock, nothing's getting done.
Right.
So if we can just deal with the common sense problems, that, okay, I like it.
And then you can say, see how we agreed on the hot dog thing? Let's agree about this.
I like it.
We were able to come together around hot dogs. Can we please come together around the tax code?
Look, I like it.
I vote for it.
All right, makes sense to me.
Thank you. That'll do it for your feedback. It's time for this week's
editorial question of the week. Hey.
Well, we led right into it. Now we want your help in fleshing out Jesse's platform, the Common Sense Party. So what are the other common sense things like hot dogs, daylight savings time, identifying burner accounts that you would put on the platform that would get your vote if Jesse campaigned on it? Hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast and Relevant everywhere else. And we'll read our favorites the next week's show. This will be good.
How about this? How about, you know how they have the crosswalk timers for pedestrians? You know? Yeah. I think everyone would chill out a little at stoplights if they had them for the drivers. Mm. Why are you giving it to the pedestrians? If I'm looking at the red light, and it says 15 seconds, I'm going to be way more chill in that stoplight because otherwise I'm sitting there, when is it going to turn? And I'm looking around at my phone, and then you have the people looking at their phone. If they see a countdown, again, common sense.
I like it.
Look, I just solved traffic. We solved hot dogs.
Now we're cooking.
Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Mosaic MSC for joining us. Make sure to check out their new music. It's fantastic. They have some great stuff. Also, head over to the website, relevantmagazine.com. We are covering the intersection of faith, culture, and everything in between every day. Follow us on the socials for the latest. And if you want to get our best content each weekday morning sent to your inbox, we send our top 5 trending stories. You can just sign up for our newsletter right there at the website. Also, if you want an ad-free experience, ad-free version of this podcast, ad-free unlimited reading at the website, and an enhanced, beautiful digital magazine, sign up for Relevant Plus. Plans start as low as $2.50 a month, and it's the best way to experience our content. All right. On that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Derek Miner.
I'm Emily Brown.
I'm Marty.
We'll see you on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
We don't even have hot dogs figured out.
Relevant Podcast Network.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.